Resources Committee, Human Services Committee, welcome. We have a room full of... Can you see me? Very good.
Got my glass.
It's the important first question. Okay, we're going to open a public hearing, is it a work session? Okay, we're going to open the work session first for introduction of committee bills.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, want to move them in block?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move LC 1133, 1153, 1155, and 2205 be introduced as committee bills.
Okay. The motion by Senator Cruz is to move 1133, 1153, 1155, and 2250 as committee bills. Discussion? Objections? Seeing no objections, it's done. We have moved these bills as committee bills, and they will be scheduled for a hearing later. At this point, I would close the public hearing on the work session on our committee bills and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 20. Could you give us a...
Thank you, Senator.
Summary, please.
Senate Bill 20 prohibits independent practice associations that have contracts with health care service contractors to provide eye care services by physicians only when the same services are covered by the association and are within the lawful scope of practice of a licensed optometrist. It requires hospital associations and health care service contractors to provide payment or reimbursement for services performed by a physician or licensed optometrist when the services in the contract or agreement provide for payment or reimbursement for a service that is within the legal scope of practice of a licensed optometrist. And I think we'll probably need someone to come up and testify for that clarification. Just as some brief background, healthcare contractors and our corporations sponsored by or connected with a group of doctors or hospitals such as health maintenance organizations. Independent practice associations are corporations wholly owned by healthcare providers or whose members are providers for the sole purpose of contracting with insurers for services to that insurer's enrollees. There's a description of optometrists there. The difference between an optometrist and ophthalmologist is that an ophthalmologist is usually a medical doctor. Optometrists are healthcare practitioners trained to diagnose signs of ocular, neurological, or systemic health problems and treat vision disorders. Thank you, Senator.
Okay.
No example.
Okay. David Wolf, Wayne Schumacher, and Leland Carr, would you please come forward and present your testimony? And if you would introduce yourself before you give the testimony, we would appreciate it.
Chair Morissette, member of the Senate Human Services Committee, my name is Dr. David Wolf. I'm an optometric physician in private practice in Lake Oswego, Oregon, and president-elect of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. I'm here today to provide testimony on the merits of Senate Bill 20. With me today is Wayne Schumacher, the executive director of our association, who has more detailed knowledge of the provisions of this bill and can provide additional information that may be required. Patient eye care in Oregon is being adversely impacted by a medical insurance situation that prevents patients from obtaining medical eye care from their optometric physician by withholding referrals or by diverting them to a different class of medical eye care provider. Patients often present themselves in optometric offices for their eye problems since they wish to see their regular primary eye care doctor. Far too frequently, patients find that their health plan has changed their provider panel or contracts with a different provider panel administrator, and that organization will not let the patient see their regular eye doctor for medical eye care services. This practice of diverting patients inevitably leads to duplicate office visits, slower diagnosis and treatment, and significant inconvenience and time away from work for the patient. In several areas of the state, health plans are contracting with independent physician associations, IPAs, to administer the benefits and or authorize health care services to their members. IPAs are corporations whose stockholders are charter MDs or DOs, and there is a financial incentive to direct services of contracted health plan subscribers to their stockholder provider panel. In some cases, IPAs do allow optometrists to provide vision services under an affiliated vision panel arrangement, but they limit medical eye care services, such as the treatment of eye infections or removal of a foreign body, to panel ophthalmologists, their physician stockholders. When patients have a vision exam in my office and then later develop an eye problem, they want to be seen by their eye doctor. They will often present to my office with a medical problem, only to find out that if I see them, the visit will not be covered. They have to make a choice, either pay out of pocket or, in the midst of a crisis, find a new doctor. ORS 750.065 was adopted by the 1971 Oregon legislature, which is effective in preventing this type of behavior by hospital associations and health plans. But with the advent of managed care and non-traditional patient contracting, the intent of the legislature has been circumvented. Senate Bill 20 seeks to eliminate the loophole that now exists and requires IPAs to comply with the provisions originally intended by the legislature when they passed ORS 750.065. It prohibits IPAs from limiting the coverage of eye care services provided by an optometric physician. The Oregon Optometric Physicians Association requested this bill in order to ensure that the citizens of Oregon get the medical eye care they have contracted for and deserve. On behalf of the association, I ask for the support of the members of this committee by voting in favor of passage of Senate Bill 20 to the floor of the Senate. I thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony, and I would be pleased to answer any questions the members of the committee might have.
Mr. Chair, and maybe this will be covered a little bit later, but I don't know a lot about the scope of practice of an optometrist, and I would like to know what, and if there are a lot, don't list them all, but what are some of the medical conditions that you are able to cover if a patient comes in with a problem?
We provide a wide variety of services, mostly non-surgical services, but we can treat eye infections, eye diseases of most sorts, and in addition to regular vision and eye exams.
Glaucoma?
Glaucoma, yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Have you personally had a problem with an IPA in your area?
Yes. There are certain IPAs that I am not a member of, since I am not a physician or a DO, mm-hmm. yet patients will have medical services through that IPA. The vision component is a separate entity, so they come to me with their vision side, because the IPAs typically need a broader panel for the vision. And so the patients establish themselves in my office, and then when other problems come up, they come to me thinking that I'm their eye doctor, and suddenly they can't be seen with covered services.
Okay.
Happens on a regular basis.
Okay, I apologize for not saying independent physician association. I violated one of the cardinal rules of our committee. Okay, so there are a number of independent physician organizations around the state. In Lane County, we have LIPA, which is an IPA, and in fact, we have done some work looking at LIPA's customer relations, and OLMAP is LIPA is Lane Independent Physician Social Association. Thank you. So that's two. So I am not personally unfamiliar with the IPA, or the Independent Physician Association rules, and I know that they are owned by the physicians, and so I understand your problem. Thank you. Who wants to go?
Dr. Carter.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Leland Carr, and I wish to speak in favor of Senate Bill number 20. I also want to begin by apologizing to the committee for not supplying you with my testimony in written form. I arrived not anticipating that I'd be making this presentation. Should you wish, I'd be glad to.
I think our administrator is going to write down everything.
Word by word.
Word for word, and he'll.
I am an optometric physician licensed in the state of Oregon, and I am currently the dean of Pacific University's College of Optometry, located in Forest Grove, and we have clinics in the Portland area as well. We are the only accredited optometry program in Oregon. In fact, we are the only accredited optometry program in the northwestern United States. I favor Senate Bill 20 because I believe it will remove barriers to access. From the patient's standpoint, they will have more choice as regards the provider who cares for their vision. And from my admittedly somewhat selfish standpoint as a dean responsible for the education of roughly 75 to 80% of Oregon's optometrists, Senate Bill 20 will remove barriers that currently present an obstacle to bringing adequate numbers of patients before my students. You can't learn to be a good doctor without seeing large numbers of patients. Right now, my program struggles to provide those patients because the patients who want to come to see us in our clinics can't, because their form of eye care insurance won't allow them to choose to see us. My belief is that Senate Bill 20 will be in patients' best interests. It will give them more freedom to choose the practitioner whom they wish to be seen by. And I believe that many more patients will choose to be seen by my expert faculty and by my students, thus making for an even better educational experience. I thank you for considering my comments.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Mr. Schumacher.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Wayne Schumacher. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Optometric Physicians Association. As Dr. Wolf has explained, in 1971, ORS 750.065 was passed, and it required that health plans and healthcare service contractors reimburse the services of an optometrist for an insured, as long as the services were within the scope of practice, and that same service would be reimbursed if provided by an MD or a DO. This law was very helpful in preventing discrimination, and over the course of time, health plans complied readily with that. In the 1980s, of course, HMOs came on board, and contracting mechanisms changed. And that's, you know, what's the problem now as it was then. Those mechanisms have changed, and one of the things that health plans started to do was, frankly, advocating through risk contracts the payment and direction of care to independent practice associations, or in some cases PPOs, which are preferred provider organizations. Those entities, as Dr. Wolf has explained, are owned by physicians, and consequently there's an incentive, as he has said, that refer those people inside, everything except for vision care. Our association in 2003 actually submitted 23 cases to the Department of Business and Consumer Services, who has the authority to make sure that health plans comply with this regulation. However, in February of 2004, DCBS informed us that they do not have authority over IPAs regarding this insurance compliance. In fact, IPAs are outside of that. I want to make it real simple. All this is doing is adding the term IPA to the existing statute, and it prevents them from restricting services by optometrists. It doesn't require that vision services be reimbursed by any health plan, and it doesn't require that any eye care services be a part of the health plan. The legislature recognized the significance of optometry as a primary eye care provider in 1971, and they adopted that statute. And again, in 1999, the legislature again recognized that in passing the Direct Access to Emergency Eye Care Act, which allowed patients to see an eye doctor without requiring them to first get an authorization. And in fact, in 1999, we provided a Milliman and Robertson study that was used to aid the legislatures in determining the fact that in actuality, in a managed care setting, the services of optometrists and indeed had the potential of lowering costs. And I provided a copy of that executive summary to your paperwork there. All this is doing, and you're going to hear all kinds of probably all kinds of testimony that's going to obfuscate the issue. The fact is that SB simply seeks to eliminate that loophole and add that term to the statute in order to ensure that Oregon citizens get the medical eye care that they've contracted for and that they deserve. And of course, we ask your support of this committee to pass Senate Bill 20, and I'd be glad to answer any questions for you.
Oh, yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since you're probably as familiar with the bill as anybody, I'm just looking at the big things in Section 2, but the changes in Sections 3 and 4, are these just kind of LC's choice of making clearer language, because it doesn't really seem to change anything?
No, it doesn't change anything. It just makes sure that it cites where anything is affected by this is cited in that statute, because there are obviously relating clauses as far as...
I mean, you went in for Section 2, and LC said we should do this.
Exactly. We wanted it a one-page. They made it a two-page. Yeah.
Okay. Which is what lawyers do.
That's a good thing.
Okay, other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Should we do Patty with any wives and support people?
I want to open up.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Scott Gallant, please. Are you going to call?
You want to give it?
Yeah.
I'm surprised there's not more.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I represent the Oregon Medical Association. I hope not to use JACO as a reference today.
Thank you.
And ask me to again say what that means. This bill, I've had a number of conversations today with the proponents of the bill, Mr. Cross and others, and along with Senator Bates, about what Section 2 actually says. One, two, what an IPA actually is, and three, what they do, and four, what an insurance company or a plan really is. Just to understand the healthcare market today, managed care plans in the state are the traditional managed care plans in the state are really quite rare, except for obviously Kaiser Permanente and the Oregon Health Plan. About 80 to 85% of the market in Oregon are non-risk contracts where insurance companies negotiate services with providers on an individualized basis, and IPAs are not involved in those negotiations. As we read the subsection 2, an IPA representing their investor members' physicians, and their specific are specific definitions in the statutes of what constitutes an IPA. If they negotiated a risk contract with an insurer, this says that any optometrist would be able to be reimbursed for optometric services, whether or not they had a contract with that insurer plan, which is highly unusual. Now, in the discussions that I had earlier today, the issues that were raised were primarily in whether or not IPAs were signing for panels. You know, the health plan requires a variety of providers be included in order to provide services, including optometric services. I'll use Lane County as an example. The executive director of the IPA, Independent Physicians Association in Lane County. Can I say IPA now?
Yeah, you can say it. If you say LIPA, though, you have to.
Informed me that they had just recently signed a contract with optometrists to provide optometric services under, you know, for their health plan, which is the actual insurer. Obviously, optometrists provide optometric services on a fee-for-service basis, just as physicians do. So that is not affected by this. But fundamentally, this sort of entity, in representing its members, typically physicians, MDs, and doctors of osteopathy, and medical doctors, they negotiate reimbursement rates for medical services. And once they did that under this bill, then the insurer, unless they're self-insured or otherwise, would have to pay any optometrist for that service as we read the bill. So, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that if it's at all possible, you give us an opportunity to sit down with proponents of the bill to actually narrow the bill to the issue that they actually are trying to address, because I think this is exceedingly broad and may miss the mark of what their concern is.
Mr. Cross, did you want to come up to the table?
For Scott.
Question. Okay, question.
What's your real concern here? I guess I'm no, this isn't an expansion of scope in any way, shape, or form. I had heard that there were issues, that there might be insurance issues. I've been told that they're not. So what is it you're really trying to get at here? I mean, if there are issues here, they clearly need to be addressed. And I guess I'm just a little too dense to have got it yet. So if you could.
And I may be too, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cruz, because I have heard a variety of reasons of why the bill is necessary. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, I've just been told different reasons. Again, independent practice associations negotiate risk contracts for MDs and DOs, all right, with an insurance plan. And as this is drafted, even though their owner members are not optometrists or other affiliated groups, if they negotiated a risk contract for medical services, they represent MDs, doctors of osteopathy, and that included medical ophthalmology services, eye care services that physicians provide, rightfully so, and legitimately so, then this says that you then would pay any optometrist, whether they are affiliated with the insurance plan or not, for services provided to those insured patients, is how this bill is written.
Okay. What I'd like to do is I would like to have Holly Robinson come up, and maybe Wayne, who we're having a discussion about what the language means and whether or not the bill is doing what you think it is or they think it is, and I'd like to settle that issue, and you kind of sit in the middle and be the referee, and I want Wayne to sit down. And Wayne, if you have a, can you respond to what Scott is saying, and if it's a language problem and an interpretation problem, I would like to know if there's a problem, if there really is a problem, or if it's an interpretation of the draft which doesn't say what you're saying, you think it says. So, Holly, would you Wayne, you heard the explanation of what he perceived as a problem. You tell us if you agree or disagree with what he's saying.
I'd have to disagree with him. I'm sure that's his interpretation, but okay. I believe that it is not. That's not the way we intended it, and I think Holly can probably be more explicit to that since she essentially wrote it and researched it, and that's the key issue she's researched.
Okay. If we're talking about the language of the bill, and if there's a dispute over what it says, I would like to have a response from the person who drafted the bill. And you got two microphones, you can talk into both of them.
Double speak. It's an attorney.
You need a microphone, Holly. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Holly Robinson from Legislative Council. First of all, I need to apologize. I am likely to be inarticulate. We are in the process of finishing our drafting for Senate deadlines. And having been dragged into this, I...
Kicking and screaming.
I would have to say, based on my conversations, and then as the drafter of this, I do not believe that it can be interpreted in the way that Mr. Gallant thinks it can be. I mean, I understand his concern, but I don't believe that that's what the words of the bill say, nor the intent of the bill.
Yes. Now. Senator Cruz.
Okay, a question I asked earlier, but since you're the drafter, just to double check, as I'm reading sections 3 and 4, you just inserted more appropriate, more defined language. It doesn't really change a whole lot, does it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, no. It took the underlying concept that was included in those previous or those sections of statute and sort of flipped them, but the end result is really the same, which is there's an ability to obtain optometrist services if one in the context of this universe and services that are solely within the context of an optometrist. We are not in any way expanding scope of practice of what an optometrist can do. But Sections 3 and Sections 4 are, I think, you're correct, they are a redrafting, basically, of current law.
Follow-up. And as I read the bill in total, basically what it says is if an optometrist delivers services that are covered, they will be paid. If they're not covered, they won't. I mean, that was my read. Is that relatively correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I would agree with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Chair. Response.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me read the provisions of the section, which I understand there may be a disagreement over its interpretation, but I think it's important to do this. The Independent Practice Association is an association of physicians, MDs and DOs, whose...
Could you speak a little louder, please?
Of MDs and... an association of MDs and DOs who negotiate risk-based contracts with insurance plans. The bill says specifically that an IPA representing its members, physicians, MD, medical doctors, and doctors of osteopathy, for what their members' reimbursement is going to be for a wide variety of services, from neurosurgery to taking moles off of someone to medical eye care or eye care services. If they negotiate a contract with Regents for a risk-based contract for their members' payment, then theoretically they must also, the insurer theoretically somehow has to pay for non-affiliated optometric services that the entity did not negotiate with the insurer for. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Question, Mr.
Yes. Senator Mark Anderson.
Go ahead then, Holly. You might be answering my question then. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair and Senator Miles Anderson, I think the conflict is coming in the definition that Mr. Allen's using in terms of independent practice association. He is limiting in a way that the statute does not limit. The statute that we rely on for this does not say doctors and doctors of osteopathy. It says a corporation wholly owned by providers and a group of individuals that have to comply with all of the other insurance code provisions. So he is reading in, with no due disrespect, a limitation that doesn't currently exist because of the underlying definition of independent practice association that this bill relies upon.
And Mr. Chairman, I really would appreciate an opportunity to, in maybe a more rational setting, try to walk through this maybe with the parties, but there is also a definition of medical service contract that includes medical and health care services, and I don't know of any independent physician association that is not owned by medical doctors and doctors of osteopathy whose purpose, in major part, is to negotiate rates of reimbursement for their members.
Okay, I still would like to follow up on this point, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Miles Anderson.
Thank you. I'm not sure exactly how IPAs work, but from what I'm getting from this conversation is that when a service is provided and a patient goes to an optometrist, yet his primary physician is with the IPA, this bill will make the insurance company have to pay the optometrist, even though the optometrist is not really a member of the IPA. I'm not sure I'm making myself clear.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miles Anderson, you are. The confusion comes in that there are services under the insurance code, and I'm going to use that term sort of generically, that the insured in that case is entitled to, irregardless of who creates the IPA. And in this case, it would be optometry services within the parameters of what an optometrist can provide in the legal scope of practice. If you had a much more limited type of practice of doctors who got together according to the way that it's being explained, and they didn't provide a certain type of service, but the insurance code or our insurance statutes mandate that they be provided, it doesn't mean that they don't have the obligation. They still continue to have the obligation to provide those services to their insureds, even if the group of people that got together to provide the service didn't actually provide it. And that I think is the misperception in the way that it's being explained to you, because there are a whole array of services that are provided under the insurance code that are required. And the fact that if the group of doctors getting together doesn't mean they don't have an obligation to provide this other service.
Just to follow up. So if you have a preferred provider plan, that's, you can't make the same correlation. You have a preferred provider plan, which a provider, you need to go through your preferred provider first.
Correct. But there are still services that they are obligated to provide to the insured, regardless of how they end up providing them. Would be, I think, the simplest way to describe that.
Yes, Senator Cruz. Scott, help me with this one. Okay. An IPA contracts with an insurance company for services. And eye care is part of the services that is in the contract. The IPA has optometrists on the panel and some are not. Okay. And the patient would choose an optometrist not on the panel if they had the choice.
You could say the same, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Or
it could be an ophthalmologist who's not on the panel as well.
Or okay. My question, though, is if the patient goes to their optometrist and the service is covered because the insurance contract covers it, even though they're not on the panel, who's heard?
Would you ask the question again, please?
Okay.
I'm fine. We have, okay. You're either on the panel or not on the panel, regardless of whether you're a winner or
the entities that's in play here. There's the IPA, mm-hmm. there's the insurance company, and there's the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the patient is choosing to go to an optometrist that's not on the panel, but, and it's still a covered service, that, I mean, the insurance company is going to pay. And the same as they would pay if it was an optometrist on the panel. But since it's not on the panel, they're still going to pay. Is some way, is the IPA injured in that process?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I'm very confused by the question. I mean, if the question is if a patient goes to a practitioner who is not on the insurance company's plan and provides a benefit, they would pay out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a result of whether or not it was an MD or a physician or an optometrist or someone else. But they would still receive service. As you know, there are exclusive contracts, which are a different entity in and of itself. Those are, again, determined by a insurance plan, which an IPA is not, and are typically non-risk contracts. And some physicians are on those panels, some physicians are not. Or you have out-of-panel physicians or other practitioners, you'll pay a higher rate, you can still receive the service from that practitioner. So I'm not quite grasping what you're...
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to figure out who this bill actually harms, is what I'm trying to figure out. And so you have a patient who needs the services of an optometrist, and the IPA has an optometrist on their panel. He could go to them. Everybody's happy, except maybe the patient who wanted to go to a different optometrist. And I'm saying, from the perspective of the insurance company, if the person's on the panel, they're going to pay. The fact that the patient has choice, I'm not sure they're really harmed because they were going to pay. So and if the IPA is not intrinsically harmed in this, I'm trying to figure out who ultimately this bill is harming. That's all I want to know. It seems to me it's a patient choice thing to some degree, but if there's language in here that is putting some entity at risk, then it needs to be addressed. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Go ahead.
Dr. Bates, introduce yourself, please, Dr. Bates.
Yeah, I'm Dr. Bates. I'm also a senator here in the state legislature, Alan Bates from Southern Oregon. Thank you for letting me speak, Mr. Chair. I'm going to start by trying to answer Senator Cruz's question and make some comments about the bill. It depends who you believe in this debate right now, to answer your question. If the patient goes to an optometrist who is not a part of the IPA and does not have a contract through the IPA with that particular insurer that the patient has, and they go there, if this bill were to force payment in that situation, the IPA would be losing control and be potentially at risk for not being able to control their costs and access. That's who might be hurt under those conditions. If you believe, as I do, that this bill does not do that, then there's no harm done. And the only harm might be is if the patient went to an out of plan, a non-PPO optometrist, then the patient would be hurt because they've made a bad choice. They're going to pay that bill themselves probably because the contract says you're supposed to go to a PPO optometrist in that situation. What I believe the bill does, what we tried to do with this bill, was to change the situation that's occurring in some parts of the state but not in others. IPAs, whether they're physician-owned or partially physician-owned, some have allowed optometrists into the PPO and some have not, and that's the real problem. In my particular case, as an example, I'll give you a couple of examples that may make it clearer to you, or at least I hope make it clearer to you, is that if I have a patient in my practice who I think needs the services of an optometrist but not an ophthalmologist, previously to a few weeks ago, I couldn't do anything much about that except send them to an ophthalmologist who had contracted through the IPA with your insurance carrier that patient has. That ophthalmologist would often not even see the patient, but have that patient seen by an optometrist who worked for the ophthalmologist, and that's how they got inside the IPA. If I wanted to send that patient to an optometrist who was freestanding, the patient would be hurt and the bill would not be paid. So what we're trying to do here is tell IPAs that you cannot exclude freestanding optometrists as a class of individuals from your IPA. Now, some IPAs in the state that have always had a good relationship with the local optometrist took some in, didn't take them all in, took the ones they thought that they needed or were appropriate for them. They have their own criteria for that, and that's fine with me. But there are some IPAs in the state that have chosen to say we're not taking optometrists, we're freestanding at all. We'll take ophthalmologists, and those ophthalmologists can then hire optometrists, and that's the access point. You know, I think that's inappropriate, and that's what I was trying to work with on this bill, and that's why I worked with the optometrist on it. I'm sorry that we've gotten to loggerheads. We talked about this for about an hour before coming in here today, trying to resolve the issue. And I personally feel that Holly Robbins has given us what the bill really says. Others may disagree, and Scott and I work together a lot of stuff, and I have great respect for him, but I think in this particular issue, the bill says what we think it should say. And I hate to say this, but sometimes people just don't see eye to eye.
And that's the only thing I don't believe in.
That is an ophthalmologist problem to fix.
Yes. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anybody can chime in on this one. This is not my area of expertise, so let's say under this bill, and someone goes to a different optometrist for this, is the ability to levy charges for their services, does that can they charge whatever they want, or would they still be limited for being reimbursed by whatever the insurance company's plan would be? I mean, that would be a question where you talk about limiting costs, you can go to somebody else, but they're going to charge twice as much as what the standard of care normally would be, or is there some control over that at all?
If the bill does, Mr. Chair and okay. Senator Metzger, if the bill does what we think it does, which I believe it does, in order to be on that panel for the IPA, you have had to agree to the contract that the IPA set up. And that means you've practiced this within your scope of practice and that you are paid a fee based on that negotiation. And so you are, when you accept that contract, you are in that position. Now, just being in the IPA doesn't automatically say you've accepted every contract they sign. And they actually have two kinds of contracts they sign. They have the risk contracts, which are getting pretty rare now, and they have contracts they negotiate with insurance companies because those can be very complex. And most of us sign those off individually or we sign them off in mass on a yearly basis. And that's just the way the system works. If a person, an individual, is in the IPA but chooses not to follow one of the contracts, that's their business, but they're not going to be able to be paid necessarily by an insurer because they're saying you're no longer a PPO, you've not agreed to our contract. And, you know, and that's the way the IPA has some control over what the contracts look like.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzger, I do, however, wonder, and I know this may sound like just trying to confuse matters, I'm really not, but the necessity of changing the language in sections 3 and 4 of adding payment or reimbursement, what the effect of that change, what the necessity of that change is. And so your question was, well, if I just charge X amount, this says that you're going to would you be required to pay me whatever my charge was? Typically under reimburse, as you know, you negotiate rates, at least IPAs, negotiate rates with insurers for those services, et cetera. And I don't know what impact that language has or why it was added to the bill. I'm sure there's a clear reason for it, but I just don't see it. And the other subsection, subsection 2, basically says that if you have an exclusive contract, as I recall, then these provisions, were much more limited. That language is coming out, It may be from legislative counsel that there's some clarification, but that certainly wasn't the indication our counsel provided on that particular piece. But again, I think we're confusing two different types of entities. One is insurers, including Medicaid, and what they require for panels, what insurers do in regard to reimbursement with their insureds, and what independent practice associations actually do. And again, Dr. Bates, Senator Bates, and I and Bill Cross, you know, had a long discussion about this about an hour ago. What I have learned so far is that this bill is for multiple purposes, from trying to figure out how not to exclude independent practicing optometrists who may not be affiliated with ophthalmologists, to other purposes that are more broadly thought of by people who have testified before. So I think it is confusing. I'm not sure that the language is as clear or directed at the right entity that appears to be the problem, be the concern of the proponents of the legislation.
Would you like to respond?
My response to Mr. Chair and Senators, my response would be that I think we have
identify
to
identify yourself one more time, please.
Alan Bates, State Senator, okay. And
still
position. Yeah, it's been 7 minutes. I'm not sure, but since I'm late from my committee meeting, I may be drummed out by now. Yeah. But you really have to look at the paper the first next day to see if you're above the fold on some issue. We're dropping like flies around here. I think we have to rely on legislative counsel to give us that information of whether or not the bill says what we think it does and what our intent is. Holly Robinson has expressed to me that she believes it does. If you'd like to get a second opinion from another LC or outside source, I mean, it's appropriate. But I think that the thing to do today, if I can be so bold, is you have given it a hearing, potentially make a decision and give it a work session and move it to the House where they can look at it again and have a second shot at it over there. As you know, sometimes the delay in this process is enough to kill a bill. And this is a real problem in some areas of the state. It's kind of interesting that some of the areas we're most concerned about, the IPAs we're most concerned about in the last several weeks, have moved to bring optometrists freestanding suddenly into the IPAs. Somehow, I mean, maybe it's coincidental, but it seems rather strange they're suddenly moving in that direction. I think getting it spelled out in law is worthwhile.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And others wishing to testify? No others wishing to testify, I'll close the public hearing, and we will stand down for just a moment. Bill 20.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to send Bill 20 to the Senate floor to be passed recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 20 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yes.
Senator Starr.
Yes, Chair Marchette. I, as one who has had opportunity to receive services from the Optometric College at Pacific University and in other places, I feel like that this is a good patient choice bill, and I'm going to support it.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is very interesting. I think Dr. Bates was very clear on some points that I thought was helpful. I came into the hearing prepared to kind of stand down this for a little bit until we kind of worked some of these issues out. But I was surprised, actually, to see that our good friends from the OMA really didn't have any response to stated questions. I expected there would be a bit more substance there. I think what I got from what Dr. Bates was saying was that it gets to your question, Senator Cruz, who is being harmed here. And it sounds to me, and it was not refuted by the parties up there, is is that by going through the ophthalmologist to get to the optometrist, obviously there's additional cost there, because the ophthalmologist obviously isn't working for free. He's going to take a piece of that, as opposed to being able to negotiate with an optometrist for when those services are the only services that are necessary, could provide a service for less cost. And at the same standpoint, I could see the objections of the ophthalmologist, because that's kind of their gatekeeper to get people to them. And if someone can provide services without their need, you know, then there's a pool of patients. So I would say, Mr. Chair, that since I didn't hear the type of refutable evidence that I was expecting to hear when those charges were made, I would be amenable to going forward.
Thank you. Other comments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Montes Anderson.
And I want to add something. Access is so important, and cost containment is so important. And for those two reasons, I will be supporting the bill.
Other comments? Okay. We'll have a roll call vote, please.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Senator Metzger.
Aye.
Senator Montes Anderson.
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Chair Morsak?
Aye. Thank you. Passes unanimously, and I would ask Mr. Cruz to carry this bill.
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully request that we have Senator Bates carry.
I would.
If he was
in the room, I would ask him.
I'm sure he will be happy. I will.
Senator Bates will carry the bill, whether he wants to or not.
Thank you. If he declines, I would be happy to.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Next item, we will have a public hearing on Senate Bill 289. And we'll wait for just a moment.
Bye! You don't care about fruits and vegetables before?
Yeah, this is carrots for eyesight we're going to hear about.
Yeah. Carotene, or is that probably good stuff?
Well, that was the class from the school.
Yeah.
Yeah.